First case, 13017, Selco Partnership Verizon Wireless seeks a special use exception to place a telecommunications tower. Sections 11540, 115-194.2, and 115-210 of the Sussex County Zoning Code. The property is located on the west side of Cedar Neck Road. The 911 address is 30430 Cedar Neck Road in Ocean View. The zoning district is GRNB1. The tax parcel is District 134, Map 9, Parcel 67. We have three letters of opposition, a petition with 24 signatures in opposition to the application, zero letters of support, and two mail return.
Good evening, members of the board. Even though I sound like Kathleen Turner, my name is John Tracy with the Conway, Sargent, and Taylor. Recently, the good news I can say is this is the last one here in the docket for a while. Newcastle County gets the benefit of curse of my services. I have with me several folks, some of whom you've met, some of whom you've not. Mr. Sharp, I can have them all come up and get
started
individually. Here's Andy Peterson, who the board knows is our RF engineer. Bell, who's our site acquisition specialist. Pete Albano, as far as I know, no relation to Captain Lou, is our civil engineer tonight. And then Braxton Deese.
Go up to the podium there. That's fine. We'll do you one at a time. Can you state your name and address for the record, please? Where we're from, the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you.
Here is when you see me, it's what it usually is for the approval of a telecommunications monopole. This one is 135 feet.
Mr. Tracy, if you hit the green button on your microphone. Thank you.
Do I have to say it all over again?
Yep.
Good evening, members of the board. John Tracy from Young, Conway, Stargett, and Taylor here on behalf of the applicant, Selco Partnership. As you're used to seeing me here, I'm here for a telecommunications monopole. This one is 135 feet tall. That includes the 5-foot lightning rod on the top of the facility. It's to be placed on a property located northwest of the intersection of Cedar Neck Road and Piney Point Road, north of Ocean View. The subject property is a little bit over an acre, about 1.1 as you can see. It has a commercial business on the property, a contractor's business. It's split zoned, B1 to the front, GR to the rear. The same property owner also owns parcel 59.12 immediately below this. The area, as aerial photos will show you, is a mix of commercial and residential zoning, including C1 zoning directly across the street, with very dense residential direction as you head out in all directions from this area. In fact, that's one of the immediate drivers of this application, given the dense population here. The location chosen on this property allows us to establish this use without needing any variances from this board. It complies with all setbacks. It complies with the lighting and fencing requirements. It's located to the rear of the property while near the trees, not infringing upon any of those trees or the wetlands that are within. As the board has heard me talk about before, Verizon is the recipient of an FCC license to provide telecommunication services on licensed bands. As you're aware, as we've talked about over the years that I've been coming here, the demand for these services only continues to increase. No longer is it just phones in people's cars for purposes of making calls, but there's internet capabilities, there's video capabilities, there's texting capabilities, and there's been increased demands for these services over time, and in turn, those demands have fueled the need for more facilities such as these. This here is both a capacity as well as a coverage site. this is recognizing both that the facilities around this one are overtaxed and need additional support, as well as that there's gaps in reliable coverage of both in-vehicle and in-car service. When we talk about in-building, we're not just talking about offices and commercial businesses, but residences as well. As the RF design report showed you, in the last half of 2023, 76% of all adults and 86.8% of all children lived in wireless-only homes. People that have ditched their weekly or monthly phone bill, I can't even remember what it was anymore, for purposes of their coverage. Within these subgroups, the demographic subgroups with the highest percentages of wireless-only adults, including adults ages 25 to 29, a little over 87%, and those 30 to 34, that's actually just over 90%, as well as adults renting their homes, also 86%. We, of course, with the advent of COVID, the further demands on the network from both in-building, in-home work, in-home study. As I've told you all before, while we all hoped that this would kind of change back to whatever normal was before COVID, my son is a meteorologist and he hasn't worked in an office since March of 2020. So there are segments of the society that are going to be continuing to need these services out of their homes. In addition, as I mentioned before, when you have this cluster of homes, businesses, cars, all using the service at the same time, and as you know, we used to talk about it as a May to September phenomenon. I think we're seeing it extends out in either direction beyond that with Sussex County, particularly as you're close to the beaches. But you have what I call the concert effect or the sporting event effect, where you know there's good coverage in the facility that you're in, but you can't get on your phone for whatever reason because there's 20,000 people trying to do the same thing at the same time, and everybody's trying to get on their phones. It has the import of constricting the coverage footprint, which leads to the capacity problems that we have here. And then finally, as Mr. Peterson will talk about and his report talked about, wireless communication facilities are playing a bigger role in the 911 field. You have roughly 70% of all calls being made to 911 through wireless technology as opposed to a landline. And you also have the folks that are the first responders who are relying on this technology not only to make and receive calls, but on onboard computers that are in a lot of their vehicles relying on wireless technology. So all of that comes to a situation where it brings me here today. And you know, you've heard me say before, our goal, if we can, is to co-locate on existing facilities. That's a quicker route, it's a less expensive route. And you can see from our report, two of the four first-tier neighbors that are identified in the report are actually co-locations on existing water tanks. There aren't any tall structures in this area, which is not uncommon for Sussex County, hence the need for us to be here to seek relief. So with that, I'm going to bring Mr. Peterson up, and we'll do the RF portion of the testimony first. What do I do to move this? Which arrow do I push to advance the slideshow? Or is that all you? Not going to have a slide. There we go. Just want to have these, because he's got these on charts, but we also have. So Andy, you heard me talk about this as both a capacity and a coverage site. Is that accurate?
That's right, yes.
Okay. So you have propagation maps, as this board has seen. I know, Mr. Livengood, this may be your first tower, but these guys all start blazing when he gets up here to call. I'm kidding, they're very intent. why don't you tell the board what this particular map is showing?
Sure. So before that, just to, and I know many members of the board have heard this before, but in order to provide adequate service for subscribers, Verizon has to have strong enough signal, so coverage has to be there, but we also need adequate radio resources available for whatever the demand is at a given time, whether it's for voice or data or both or one of the other myriad applications that folks are using their device for these days. So without those two ingredients, we don't have service. So the first set of plots that we're going to see, they're really coverage-centric, where we're just talking about signal strength. How many bars are on your phone? Is it strong enough to penetrate your home, into your basement, into your office, into your place of work or recreation? And then we'll look at the capacity aspect. And this site, as was mentioned, is really a dual purpose. We're looking to improve particularly in-building coverage. There's pretty good coverage. There's okay coverage as far as on the street in this general area. And that's what we're illustrating on page 2 of the design report and also on the board to my left. This is the existing coverage today. So this is first and foremost a map of the area, the ocean and beach area, of course, to the east. typical map features. We have some Verizon Wireless specific information, including the surrounding sites. Those are the black target icons that dot the periphery of the map, and the details of those are on page 2 as far as, you know, the height of the antennas, the structure type. As was mentioned, the two sites east and west, immediately east and west of our site, they're about a mile away, and they're both water tanks that Verizon's co-located on over the years. And then most central to the exhibit is the location of the proposed facility.
And just also for clarification, you see the Dove Hudson General down to the bottom. That's what's known as a small cell site. So that is really a limited service site hyper-focused on a particular area. It's only about 40 to 45 feet tall, correct?
Yeah, it's a small site really just serving folks really on and around the roadway there. What we have currently is in green, so beyond all that Verizon Wireless site information, we have this green areas that are shaded showing adequate service to for your device in a building, and then yellow where you have some weaker signal but still strong enough to serve you in a vehicle. You'll notice that the pretty dense residential areas north and west of our site are lacking that strong in-building coverage, and to the south also lacking. So that's really from a coverage perspective what this site is going to do. It's going to provide stronger signal into the residences and places of business that really are up and down Cedar Neck Road.
And as we move on to the next map, and before we do that, one of our obligations is to identify any structures that are within 2 miles of the chosen site for purposes of co-location. And it's correct, is it not, that there are no available tall sites within 2 miles that we are not already utilizing?
There's certainly, yeah, there's none that would meet our technical need. There are, you know, there's the water tanks. They're really the closest tall structures. We're already using them. They're about a mile to the east, a mile to the west. 2 miles is really a long ways to go nowadays to look for a suitable a suitable co-location opportunity. But yet, to answer, yes, there's nothing within 2 miles that is useful for us.
Okay, now we flip over to the next one.
Poorly, probably.
So the next slide is also in the report on page 3, and this, through propagation modeling, we're able to activate the site to see what kind of coverage we can get out of the facility. So with the antennas installed at 125 feet, we're now adding some significant in-building coverage. We're also bolstering the in-vehicle coverage, probably not as obvious, but the improvement in the green strong in-building coverage is pretty clear on this map. So this facility will do what it's supposed to do in terms of improving coverage for folks in their homes, in their place of business.
And then the second part of the equation is the capacity side, and that's what this board has seen as the best server footprint maps that we've shown, which takes the antennas from the other sites and shows how they feed into the site and where the problems are and what we're trying to fix. And so this, as Andy returns to the microphone, would be the existing best server coverage.
Right, so the best server coverage here shows that the easterly facing set of antennas from the water tank that Verizon calls Great Scott, that's providing the yellow areas of coverage. The shading kind of changes as it goes over the inlet here, but it's mainly, it is this entire area that you see in yellow and over the water as well. That set of antennas is serving, that's the strongest server in that area where it's yellow. And similarly, the westerly facing set of antennas from the North Bethany Beach, also a water tank, that's providing for this green area of best server coverage. Cedar Neck Road is really kind of right on the seam of the network here, where neither of those is a dominant server. They're both getting in there, and they're both offloading some of the traffic from there. But neither of those sites is serving much more dominantly than the other, which that represents a design challenge.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, what is the problem when you have the two server areas competing with each other?
Well, you can have situations where the mobile devices are seeing them similarly from a signal strength perspective. So there's some ping-ponging that you'll be served by one, then served by the other, and served by the other. You know, you walk down the hall in your house, and you're handed off from one to the other. So some unnecessary overhead. It's seamless to the user, but it does create network traffic that the network then has to deal with. And then because we have the roadway here with a lot of residences kind of centered around it and other uses, there's a good deal of traffic right on that seam of the network. So you have two sites that are about a mile away, both kind of stretching into that area to serve that area, and there's a lot of traffic on there, cellular traffic that are overburdening those sites. So we have a situation here, and it's really becoming a year-round situation, not just a seasonal situation, where both of those sectors or sets of antennas from those sites are overburdened. They can't handle the demand. Users are experiencing slow data service, unreliable voice connections, and all the other symptoms that come along with the concert or the crowded ball game type of symptoms, where they're just unable to deal with the demand. And of course, it becomes even more noticeable when traffic picks up towards the summer. So the proposed site, now activated again through propagation modeling, is going to provide three sectors or sets of antennas. They have the effect of providing for these three best server covered footprint areas, one to the north, and I'll say a pink, one to the southeast in yellow, and one to the southwest in a darker shade of pink. And that's where the new site will be providing the strongest signal. So Verizon Wireless subscribers in those areas are now going to be served by those antennas on the new site, and the radio resources that are pumped through those antennas, basically the broadcast and reception. So it will offload the existing sites, the previous yellow easterly facing sector now is covering much less area. It doesn't have to stretch as far. Same thing with the westerly facing green sector. It can serve the subscribers that are still in its footprint much better. So the site has this ripple effect of not only is it going to improve the experience for the users in its immediate footprint, but the next tier of sites that was previously covering into the area and overreaching is now going to be able to more efficiently, more effectively serve the subscribers it should be serving.
Is there also, in kind of with this best server and capacity stuff, is there also an exhaustion issue that's occurring in this area?
There is, yeah. They're currently the not only in the summer months, but pretty much year round. These two sectors that are pointing in there are in a state of exhaustion during busy times. So whether it's a morning rush, evening rush, or sometimes it's kind of over the lunch hour, it depends on the circumstances. But what we do is we look at, and I have some charts if we want to take a look at them, that show the third busiest hour of the day. And in both of these cases, for both sectors, we're seeing a chronic state of exhaustion. And the trend line is heading north, so it's going to get worse as time goes on.
What's that mean, exhaustion?
So I can flip to it real quick, but
that mean they just can't handle anymore, basically?
Yeah, exhaustion is when the radio resources get to the mic. When the radio resources that are at the site, they can't handle the demand while still providing the level of service that Verizon Wireless customers expect. So what these charts illustrate is there's a red line that, and I should back up for a second. These are not in the packet, but I can mark them and hand them in, but there are and I can't even see from here, but we're looking at from June 2023, basically, projected out to December of 2025. So the actual data is in blue. September or October of this year. Trend line that you can see in yellow where we're following that trend line and then it's projected to continue northward. And then the red, what I'll call a soft ceiling, where the sector can provide more data than that. The blue is the actual data that's being provided on the downlink, so the data that's coming from the cellular facility to the user. But anything above the red line is going to be noticeably slower, less reliable, spinning wheel, where there are just too many users on the network. So you may be able to get that text through or make that phone call, but your device will be spinning and it will be noticeably delayed. You're not going to be able to stream, let's say, a video or do a FaceTime call with any type of reliability when you're in this exhausted state. and we have that on not only the
Great Scott,
the easterly facing sector of Great Scott, but also on the this should say westerly facing sector of North Bethany Beach, which is the water tank on the east side.
And those are the two competing sectors that you were pointing to on your map that were showing signs of fighting with each other, so to speak.
Yes, they were the yellow and green sectors that we looked at.
What's the time frame on those graphs?
So they are both the same time frame from, this is June of 2023, so a little bit before, maybe 8 months increments.
Okay, yep.
This is beginning of 2023. Obviously, or so, I think is when this was pulled, but it projects out till the end of 2025. Upward trend. In usage, so the situation is going to worsen as time goes on.
Okay, a couple other questions for Andy. As the board is aware, we have an obligation under the FCC to demonstrate that we stay within the emission standards that have been established through the Telecommunications Act of 1996. We are, as Andy's emissions report that was submitted into evidence, we are actually at about 4.7% of that 100% threshold that the government has established. And Andy, to confirm, when you came up with that 4.7%, you used what is essentially an all worst case scenario, correct?
Correct.
And you can explain to the board what that is.
Yeah, and I think I've gone through this before with the board, but I will again, for those who hadn't heard it, but the Office of Engineering Technology Bulletin 65 is the document that engineers like myself use that prescribes the formulas that we apply to determine the anticipated exposure levels. We use the specifics of the facility, so the antenna and the antenna patterns, the radio output, the cabling, all the specifics that go into this particular facility. They then feed the formulas that the FCC prescribes. Beyond that, there are upper limit assumptions that are applied. So 24/7, 365 maximum exposure or maximum power output from the radios is assumed. I assume 100% ground reflections. That doubles the incident power, quadruples the incident power density. And that is the measuring sticks that the guidelines are written in. So that single assumption quadruples the output. I also ignore any man-made or environmental clutter that would attenuate the signal. So the effect of buildings, of trees, et cetera, is ignored. And then there are several other upper limit assumptions that are detailed in the report. But all is to say that this is done in a very conservative fashion. And even with all those upper limit assumptions, the formulas yield levels that would be less than 4.7% at all areas of public access.
So, the board is aware, as long as we are able to demonstrate that we comply with those FCC guidelines, the board is not allowed to take the alleged health effects potentially emanating from these facilities into consideration when making its decision. That's pursuant to the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Finally, you did an FAA analysis, and per the FAA, this is not required to be lighted or marked, but it will be lighted or marked consistent with Sussex County rules.
That's right.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for Andrew? And I can bring up the next person.
What are the Sussex County rules, again, for the lighting?
Every 50 feet.
Starting at?
50 feet.
50 feet.
Yeah, so it'd be 50 feet, 100 feet, and then one has to be on the top if it's less than another 50 feet. So
it will.
It'll have three lights. And that is, I mean, for the board's education, because this goes back, I think, longer than any of you have been on the board. When I first started doing this, I actually had conversations with the then planning director, Mr. Lank, about we applied for a variance from that lighting requirement. And his response was, don't do it. And it's, you know, it's mostly for, I think, with the farmers in mind, in particular, crop dusting is why that requirement is there. You might look at this site and say, maybe it's not necessary here, but I've just been conditioned not to ask for that variance, so we never have.
No, we operate in that area too.
So. Yeah. Okay. So that's but that was the why it explained to me why the lighting requirement is in place. So yeah. That's it.
Mr. Peterson, and this is kind of unrelated, but the first chart that you showed us regarding Verizon reliable coverage area, and I guess I should say from my perspective, and yes, we've had a number of cases addressing cell tower placements along the way. Does your organization happen to have a chart that shows Sussex County in its entirety?
Not with me, but that can be shared. As far as where, I think I would have to check with Verizon on that to make sure. I mean, it's. I don't think they would have a problem sharing that information.
Speaking for myself only, and I'd be interested in seeing the Sussex County in its entirety, yellow and green, with the town centers marked on it, if they would be willing to share.
I don't think that would be a problem, and we may have in the past years, you know, in years past, that request kind of rings a bell, but I can check and certainly provide.
Thank you very much.
If they're okay.
Appreciate it.
Yep. If there's no other questions for Mr. Peterson, I will bring up Mr. Albano briefly.
And before I forget, Mr. Peterson, I think the testimony was that those documents you were going over, some of those were not already in the record. Is that right?
The only thing that was not in the record was the last chart he showed with the squiggly lines. Everything else was in the report.
So we'll need to make sure that that's submitted over to Ms. Norwood so it can be properly entered into the record.
Should I mark it?
Staff can mark it, but we just want to make sure that that gets put in since you were showing it. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks.
All right, Pete, you've been sworn in already. I just want to go over a couple of questions for you. I've indicated that this is 130 feet tall with a 5-foot lightning rod. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And it is going to comply with all setback regulations with regard to these facilities?
That is correct.
It's not infringing on any wetlands or wetland buffers that are on or adjacent to this property, correct?
Correct.
And typically, once these things are constructed, they tend to be serviced by maintenance folks about once every 4 to 6 weeks. Is that correct as well?
That's correct.
Okay. And I think I mentioned, but if I didn't, this will be fenced and enclosed in compliance with Sussex County rules and regulations?
Correct.
Okay. And it is going to be lighted in compliance with Sussex County regulations?
Correct.
Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Albano?
Mr. Sharp?
I notice on the site plan here that you said it's not in the wetlands or the wetlands buffer. I just want to make sure I'm clear, because it looks like the wetlands boundary would be on the property to the rear of the site. Is that correct?
Correct.
Correct.
So that buffer kind of comes in, but only slightly to the rear of this property. Is
correct.
That right?
It's a small dotted line.
I just want to make sure I was reading that correctly. So, do you know about approximately how far away it is from the wetlands boundary? Eyeballing it would look like it's probably at least 60 feet, but I can't quite tell that.
Tower's 45 feet from the back of the property, so it'd be less than that.
Buffer, but not the wetlands.
Oh, from the wetlands.
No, from the wetland line.
I would think, Mr. Sharp, you're probably pretty close to that.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Albano? All right, I'm actually going to introduce a new component to this. I have submitted previously reports regarding property values and things of that nature. And I have Mr. Dees, who was the author of the most recent report. I did submit it electronically. I can give you paper copies if you would like it. I have paper copies here. But I just want him to talk to you a little bit about, because as we've seen in some of the more recent applications, there's been concerns expressed about property values and the impacts or lack thereof on them. People obviously have one view of these types of situations. And so we will tend to get appraisers, and this is the third time I've had an appraisal study done regarding property value impacts since 2005. But since Mr. Dees was available, I thought I would have him come here and just talk a little bit about that for the record for you guys. So if you would like to introduce yourself to the board.
My name is Braxton Dees. I'm a real estate appraiser. I own and operate a company, W.R. McCain & Associates. We're based out of Salisbury, Maryland. And we've been around for a little over 36 years. We cover pretty much all of Delmarva, Eastern Shore of Maryland, Eastern Shore of Virginia, Sussex, and Kent County.
And I have asked your office, this is the second time I've asked your office, to prepare an analysis of the impacts on property values or lack thereof from these facilities, correct?
Correct.
And generally, so when you do this, correct me if I'm wrong, there's both a review of national literature and then there's your own analysis that you do, correct?
Correct.
Why don't you tell a little bit of the board first about the in general, the review of the literature nationally.
Okay, what we do initially is we research different articles that have been written over the years about the impacts of cell phone tower or proximity to residential properties and their impacts on value with proximities to cell towers. So we went through, you know, researched the various appraisal institute articles that have been written, various. We also looked at articles that were also done in recognizing the impacts of high transmission tension lines or electrical lines, power lines, what those have as well, because a lot of people will view those sometimes similar to a tall tower, a cell tower. But in summary, all those articles or all those papers and articles that have been written, studies that have been done, some of them here in the domestically in the United States and a couple articles that were done in New Zealand years ago, tend to show that the impacts of property values are very minimal, if any. And that as the properties that are get further and further away from the towers, if there is any impacts, it tends to dissipate.
And then, and those studies are referenced in your report,
they
but
are.
Then you also have done, you actually did a Sussex County and Worcester County analysis looking at cell towers and those types of properties. And did those analyses kind of dovetail what you saw in the national and international
they
research?
Did. Okay. Yes, they did.
Why don't you just tell the board a little bit about how you go about that process?
So what we did with the analysis of the regional or local sales data here in Sussex and Worcester County was we looked at subdivisions that were near and close proximity to cell towers. And we looked at, and we did what was called a matched paired analysis, where we take our subject property is the property that is in close proximity and has a view of a cell tower. We then will try to find look for subject properties that have transferred or that have sold. And then we find within that same development, we find a similar property that does not have the proximity, does not have the view of the cell tower. And we try to find these two properties that are as similar as possible as we can find, but with trying to isolate the difference being between the two parties, between the two properties being their proximity to the cell phone tower. And then we will look at the differences in cell prices between those two properties. Now, sometimes in those cases, we do have to make adjustments to the what we call the control property, which is the property that is not in proximity or not close proximity to the cell tower. It might be that it's a slightly smaller, or it might be it's slightly bigger, or it may have an extra bathroom. We use market data to make those adjustments, just like you normally would in an appraisal. And then once that control property has been adjusted for whatever differences like that there may be, the remaining difference is their proximity to the cell tower. And then we take those, and we have several examples, four or five examples, in four different subdivisions in Sussex and Worcester County. And then we use those differences to determine what sort of impact the cell phone tower is having on the property values.
And consistent with what your national research showed, your local research showed that there was no impact, certainly not a substantially adverse impact on property values. In fact, you found some where the property values decreased and others where the property values increased, correct?
Correct.
So, and then what I wanted to do is you've previously, in addition to your own report, I've given you copies of other reports that have been generated. I just want to read a couple summaries from those reports into the record to see if you agree with those. So the Appraisal Associates 2005 study from Bob McKinnon, it concluded in looking at properties in Newcastle County that the market demonstrates no ascertainable diminution of value to surrounding neighborhoods due to the installation or presence of a nearby communications tower. Do you agree with that statement?
Yes.
Okay. And then I had previously given, and the board has seen, an article from the American Bar Association Probate and Property Journal discussing actually a case in Sussex County dealing with a cell tower in Bethany Beach. And that article concluded that cell towers have become part of the suburban landscape and have no appreciable effect on value, like telephone poles, power lines, streetlights, or other infrastructure of modern life. Cell towers fade into the background and don't draw no more attention than other infrastructure. Would you agree with that statement?
Yes.
And then your conclusion in your most recent or 2024 report noted that there is no consistent trend which suggests a diminution in value as a result of a clear view or proximity to a communication tower. Moreover, market perception of the impact of a communication tower on property value often differs greatly from impact observed in the actual sales data. There appears to be little to no discernible difference in residential property values as a result of proximity to communication towers. Would you agree with that as well?
Yes.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Deese?
You said you did see in some of the studies that the actual value had increased. Was that because of cell coverage?
I wouldn't necessarily narrow it to that. I just think in the increases we're talking about is it might show a difference of 3%, 4%, 5%.
Okay.
You know, we're talking about a very minimal impact one way or the other. And that's probably more just the fact that the market is an imperfect market.
Mr. Sharp?
I have no questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Deese. And again, his report, as well as the other two reports I referenced, are in the record. I think as you look at those, either the Newcastle study or the Sussex County study, you see wide variations, generally no decrease to some increase. There are some where there's negative impacts, but nothing's been drawn or landed on the doorsteps of these particular facilities. In fact, it's interesting, you can read, it's referenced, and Mr. Deese was referencing this, he talked about international reports. There's one that everybody who opposes cell towers that likes to point to property values pulls this article that was done by somebody named Sandy Bond in Christchurch, New Zealand. And it talked about that these negative impacts on property values, but within the report, what was interesting is when they actually talked to people who didn't live in proximity to a cell tower versus people who did live in proximity to a cell tower, those living in proximity didn't really have negative views of the tower. It was those who weren't anywhere in the area. It's kind of the fear of unknown thing. And it also noted that there can be impacts on property values where you have a lot of vocal opposition and discussion about a facility, that tends to draw more attention to it and makes it, at times, color people's views of whether they would want to live near or not near a tower. So I wanted to bring Ms. Manchel up here just briefly because I know that a concern expressed in one of the documents that the board got online was the availability of alternative property sites. So these would be the last two photos that I submitted to the board. I think it was on Friday. It's either Friday or Monday. But as the board is aware, the only obligation in the code is to rule out structures that can accommodate these facilities within 2 miles. Once you've done that, there's no other actual obligation of looking for a particular property. Some jurisdictions, Some jurisdictions have a requirement that you have to rule out properties within a certain radius. So not only identify tall structures, but then can you rule out other properties? And I know that there was some concern expressed that there might be a better location for this facility. And so what I asked Ms. Manchel to do is to give me on an aerial photograph all of the properties that she reached out to try to locate this facility. And so you see on that one in slide one, that's basically further north of the site. You see on the yellow push pins all the properties that she visited or sent mail to and what the response was, if any. And then the next slide shows a continuation of this, I think more proximate to the property itself, where again you see all those yellow push pins of the property that she visited. So Ms. Manchel, is it correct that these yellow push pins that the board has seen, they represent properties that you reached out to?
Correct.
About this?
Yes.
And did you actually have conversations with some of the folks that declined the offer to locate a facility on their property?
I did.
And just reasons from we don't want it, to we don't have room to it, to we're doing other things with our property?
Correct.
And then others don't respond, and it's not your practice to keep following up if, in fact, you found a property owner who's indicated that they're interested in a facility, which the current property owner is.
Correct.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the board had any questions, but I wanted to put that on the record since I had seen it in print.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So again, as I mentioned there, we're aware of some opposition, and I think we've hit most of the topics in our presentation tonight. I know that there was some concern expressed about property values. You've seen the reports that we submitted into evidence, as well as Mr. Dees's testimony. The question of health effects, as we've talked about, federal law kind of trumps local jurisdictions in that regard if we demonstrate that we meet or exceed the requirements of the federal government, and we are way below what the federal government deems as safe emission standards. And alternative sites, that's the reason I wanted to have Ms. Manchel come here before you tonight, because it's not like we just went to this property and said, could we put a tower on your property? As you can see, there were a number of properties that we reached out to. And as the board has heard me say before, we don't have the ability to enforce our will on it. We're not a government agency that has ability to condemn property. We have to find a willing property owner who's willing to host this infrastructure. And so that's the process you've kind of seen behind the curtain as to how that process unfolds and looking for a site. And I think it's also important to note, and this picture up here is really a good example of it, as you heard Mr. Peterson talk about, in the 20 years that I've been doing this, the demand for these services have just increased hundreds and hundreds of times over, because not only they're not just for calling people in your car anymore, these cellular devices are for a whole variety of things and for 911 in businesses as well. And so what I've said in the past is that for the most part, the good sites have been taken. The rural properties that are not close to residential properties, there are not as many of those. Or in this instance here, you have maybe one or two properties that you could say were more appropriate, but the property owner wasn't interested in it. And so as this demand increases and as the need for 911 coverage increases, you find yourself moving closer and closer to more populated areas, because that's where the service needs to be, that's where the people are. You saw that with one of the ones I had before you. You had kind of the best of both worlds the last time. You had one that was in a more densely populated area, and then you had one that was fairly rural, where those people actually wanted the tower there because of how bad the coverage was. So, unfortunately, this is the situation that the board encounters, but if we want to keep relying on this technology and use this technology to its fullest, it requires this type of infrastructure. Some people have asked, well, what about satellite phones and things of that nature? Will that replace cell towers? I don't have a crystal ball, but I know when I'm standing and I'm driving my car in a heavily wooded area, my light radio doesn't work very well. But the bottom line is there's a protection built into the code, which if a new technology comes about and these towers are no longer needed, we're obligated to remove them. And that's any carrier, not just Selco. So the board is, I think, very well aware of the standard that applies to these applications. We have to demonstrate that the impacts of these facilities are not substantially adversely affecting neighboring properties. That means, as the Supreme Court has said, I can have an adverse effect, I just can't have a substantially adverse effect. Here, we don't believe there's any adverse impact. As you've heard, we don't emanate any noises or sounds. There's no smells coming off of these things. We're not taxing local infrastructure like schools or traffic. They basically just sit there and provide reliable coverage. I know concerns have been expressed about property values. I think we've addressed those in this instance. And again, even though not an obligation, Ms. Manchel demonstrated the extent to which she went to try to find a property, perhaps other than the property we have. But this is a property that complies with the code. It's over an acre in size. We meet all of the setbacks. It is an existing commercial business that's on this property. So we would ask the board to review and approve this application. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is anyone present who would like to speak in favor of this case? Is anyone present who would like to speak in opposition to this case? Anything else from the board? At this time, I'll close the public hearing for case 13017 for Selco Partnership, Verizon Wireless, and entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case number 13017 for Selco Partnership and Verizon Wireless for the requested special use exception pending a final written decision based upon the record made during the public hearing, because the proposed use will not substantially affect adversely the use of neighboring and adjacent properties.
Second.
Motion and a second. Mr. Levengough.
Aye.
Dr. Carson?
Aye.
Mr. Hastings?
Aye.
And aye too. So the vote of 4-0, your case is approved.